All righty then. Welcome back to the morning show. That's a nice variation of No One Likes Us. A little punk action there. Pretty cool. All right. No One Likes Us, but everybody wants to come here to Philadelphia, partly because when you come to Philadelphia, you get to listen to this man regularly. That would be Ross Tucker. Good morning, Ross.
Al, Rhea, good morning. How are you?
We are
doing great, Ross. What's not to like? Everybody wants to come to Philadelphia. Everybody in the NFL, everybody in Major League Baseball, they want to come to Philly.
You know what? There's something to that right now, for sure. I think it's so interesting because it was just, what, last offseason that the perception of Negadelphia or whatever, I think, is one of the reasons why Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson didn't want any part of it.
Thank God.
Thank God, by the way. Thank God they didn't want any part of it. And now it's like everyone, it's like anything else in life, right? When people are really, really passionate, you can either look at that as a positive or a negative. For guys like Brian Dawkins or Chase Utley, who are beloved, it couldn't be more of a positive. For people like Ben Simmons, who are not, it couldn't be more of a negative. So last year, those guys were concerned with the negative aspects of it. I think especially the baseball guys, but even like A.J. Brown. I mean, you hear the baseball guys talk that have played for other teams, even like a Bryce Harper. And then you hear A.J. Brown, it's not like this where they used to play.
Yeah.
Well, that's the crazy thing, Ross, is that he comes here from Tennessee, has the big game, obviously, after having a couple games that were a little off.
Right.
Catches two touchdown passes, over 100 yards. Eagles fans, from what I've heard, were kind of giving it to the Titans owner's box.
Yeah, turn around, pointing at him.
And then yesterday, the GM gets fired. Coincidence?
I don't believe in coincidences, Rhea. So, no, absolutely not. I would say this to the owner. Did you have to make it like that obvious? I mean, there's got to be more to it. What I always want on these, it's funny. I did the Titans-Bills game, the opener, on Monday Night
Football.
They got
crushed by them, right?
They did. It's the only other game where they got crushed. But I asked the PR guys, I was like, listen, what was the deal with AJ? Like, did the owner not want to pay? Like, what was it, the GM or was it the owner? Because I know it wasn't Vrabel.
No, very Vrabel.
And the guy just looked at me and was like, yeah, that's not really, I don't know. Because I was dying to know the backstory. Because here's what I think is crazy, right? Not only were the Eagles willing to give him that contract, think about it this way. They were willing to give up a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick or whatever for the right to pay him that contract. The Titans already had him.
Yeah.
They didn't have to give up anything. All they had to do was give him the money. And by the way, he wanted to be there. He's from the South.
Yep.
Nashville's like the capital of the South now. He wanted to be there.
He was hurt when they did that.
So
we have Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network, which was kind of funny. I think he buried the lead in here.
What was communicated to Robinson was that ownership was not happy about the direction of the roster that he had assembled, even though at this point, as you mentioned, the Titans are 7-5 and they've got a more than 3-game lead in the AFC South division. Certainly, as you look through Robinson's drafts, he's had some big hits. He drafted Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. He drafted Harold Landry. He also had some high-profile misses, including the likes of Isaiah Wilson and most recently Caleb Farley, who has struggled to be on the field. If you go back about a month or so ago, Mike Vrabel spoke in a press conference and was asked about the offense, and he said, if you haven't figured it out yet, this is how we're going to have to play. That was a sign that there was frustration about what they lacked at the wide receiver position in particular on that offense. Of course, the trade of A.J. Brown back in April to the Eagles did net them a promising young receiver in Treylon Burks, but he too has had some injury issues and has not stayed on the field. Just 2 days after that game, and A.J. Brown having more touchdowns and receptions and receiving yards than all the Titans wide receivers combined, the guy who drafted him and traded him, John Robinson, is out in Tennessee.
That guy did bury the lead. That's all that mattered to me, Ross.
Could have started at the end.
Yeah, really.
I always am so intrigued by these situations because the one thing I can tell you, having played for five teams, the owners in general have more involvement, I think, for certain franchises than people realize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had coaches and front office execs tell me after the fact, yeah, you know, we didn't want to cut Bledsoe, but the owner made us or whatever, right? Like they'll tell you that. And so I sort of thought, I know there's a salary cap, but there's also a budget. And some of these teams, they don't make a lot of money off the field. Like, they really want to make sure they're making a certain amount of money every season. And I wondered if the owners said to John Robinson, we're not going there. We're not paying him $25 a year. We're not paying him that much guaranteed. Obviously, with them firing him, it would seem to be that that's not the case. But here's my question. Do we really think that John Robinson, with a move this big, didn't keep the ownership abreast of what he was thinking? Like, he didn't say, hey, listen, here's what I'm thinking. We're going to trade one of our two best players to the Eagles. Here's why. Like, I don't know. I mean, I am fascinated. Hopefully over the next couple of days, more information comes out.
Well, you may, but a lot of owners depend on that they hired the right guy to tell them the right thing. Like, you agree with them. And then when your coach isn't even on board.
The coach wanting more power, maybe, yeah. Ross?
Well, that's very interesting, Rhea. I played with Vrabel in 05 and 06 in New England, and I can't imagine how, knowing him or really anybody, that's got to be hard, right? Like, it's his job. It's his reputation on the line. He goes on TV and says, we won't trade A.J. Brown.
I know. He looked
like
an idiot.
As long as I'm the coach. No. And then they trade him. So the part one of it, Rhea, is that they traded him. Part two of it is the GM kind of made Vrabel look like an ass.
Yeah,
right?
Embarrassed him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, because, you know, he wants the players to take what he says and know that he's going to be truthful and transparent. He says, we'll never trade the guy. And by the way, he got that from Belichick. Because I remember a practice one time where there was a lot of rumors we were going to trade Daniel Graham, who was a really good tight end. And after practice, Belichick brought the whole team together. He's like, listen, there's a couple of reports out there that we're going to trade Daniel Graham. He looked at Daniel Graham. He's like, we're not trading you. You're not going anywhere. I'm telling all you guys right now, we're not trading. And it was like, okay. You know, like he just totally nipped
transparency.
It in the bud. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, so you know, kind of how he gets him fired by stealing A.J. Brown, which is what we believe. Is there a chance another GM could be in trouble based off his recent dealings with Howie Roseman? I'm talking about Mickey Loomis.
Well, that's interesting too, because it's a different, you know, Rhea. It's really interesting because in both of these ownership situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
In New Orleans, the longtime owner, Tom Benson, passed away. Mm-hmm. And the owner now is his, I don't know if it's second or third wife. There was a lot of fighting between his kids
yes, yeah.
and the wife, Rita Benson. And then obviously in Nashville with the Titans, Bud Adams passed away. And he had like five kids. He has like five kids. And there was a lot of kind of fighting. It wasn't clear who the owner was going to be there, and it's one of his daughters, Amy Adams Strunk. And I want to be very clear here, Rhea.
Mm-hmm.
I am not stereotyping at all. These women
yes.
might be the single most knowledgeable. They might know more about football than I do. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's fair to wonder in these situations how knowledgeable they are and who are the people that have their ear. You know, that talk to them about these things. There's same things going on in Seattle. I say that to say Mickey Loomis also for a while was running the basketball team down. I forget what they're called. The New Orleans. No, they're not the
Pelicans.
Jazz. Pelicans. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he was running them too. So Rita is, she's at least in her 70s, might be in her 80s. I think there's a lot of trust there. I think they'd probably be more likely to fire Dennis Allen, the head coach, and blame it on him rather than fire Mickey Loomis.
Blame those deals? I mean, those deals, it's
horrible.
Still, I mean, you can't blame him on anybody. I mean, Dennis Allen wasn't making those trades.
I'm starting to have a concern about this. And my concern is if Howie Roseman calls,
don't
why
answer
are
the
you
phone.
Answering?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, exactly. he's almost going to have to, Howie's going to, Maybe the Quinn trade will be the bad one. Gave up a fourth-round pick. Now Quinn gets his knee scoped. He's going on IR. But at some point, Howie might want to have a bad trade
just so
people keep doing business with him.
No, it really is remarkable to have a record like this.
Well, and what's remarkable about it, you bring up the owners and the people in there is, you know, honestly, and we've criticized them a lot, Jeffrey Lurie has been here a long time. And things are run very professionally. Now, who knows what's going to happen when he eventually turns it over to his son? You know, like you have in these cases with Amy Adams making these decisions. What's going on with the Saints? I know Jerry Jones's daughter's involved, very mm-hmm. high up, like a president of that team and considered very well thought of on the business side.
She's on the business side, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, and the other kid just cleans the glasses, right?
Yeah, Steven.
and honestly, like, Rhea, they might be the most knowledgeable. I don't know. There's sure. so many women in football now. It's awesome. Yeah. I just don't know that. Yeah. I just don't know.
Well, it's ham-handed to fire a GM when your team is, what, 7-5 and atop the division?
Well, the timing of it is just bizarre. When's the last time? It's really strange for a GM to be fired midway through the season like this. I guess you could argue they want to give the next guy enough lead time before the draft and free agency. But all they did right now is just promote, you know, some other guy that was there.
Yeah, well, it seemed, I mean, I just read it clearly as they screwed up this thing and the coach is mad about it and the coach ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, they love the coach. They have to love the coach. I didn't know, Rhea, the angle about the Eagles fans yelling at the owners.
Oh, yeah.
That is the part that I'm really intrigued by, because you know what I've learned about really, really, really rich people? They really don't like being embarrassed.
The story always was with Jeff Lurie that when Banner left was that Lurie, and I think it was Michael Vick, I think it was kind of that era, they all showed up at a Sixers game. And they were in a box and they got shown on the, you know, the Jumbotron, and the players all got cheered and Lurie got booed because they didn't like how you know Banner. So yeah, you're 1,000% right.
Yeah, and that was it was embarrassing, and it was embarrassing on a national level, and a personal level and a national level, and this guy just fed off of it. I mean, I don't know what you think, Russ, but I actually think that this was part of the mental edge that the Eagles had in this. And I think they were so geeked up, they went off. They were too geeked up for this thing.
What did they say about it, by the way? I haven't seen the quotes from the guys. What did the O-line say after the game about all the false talk? It was like contagious.
I saw something.
There's
from
no
my
explanation lineup. For it.
No, there I was mean, no explanation.
It was a home game. It wasn't like I was blown away by that. I had no. It was like everybody took turns.
No, it was to overcome that. Was something you rarely see. Like, the Eagles are at that point where it's almost like the only one team that can beat them is themselves. And they actually beat them. They could have beaten themselves on Sunday. They really could have beaten themselves early in the game when that happened. They still overcame all of that. That's how dominant they were on Sunday. And I think, their explanations were not specific to anything. It was just it was an overall just an anxious team.
Sirianni he was on with us. Yeah, he took responsibility. He said whenever it's pre-snap penalties, that's coaching. So I don't know. You know.
What? I don't agree with that.
Well, that's
at
why
all.
I want to ask you as an offensive lineman.
No.
Okay.
So to me, I can live with aggression penalties. Yeah. You know, maybe a personal foul or a pass interference. The pre-snap is totally unacceptable. By the way, I had a couple, but totally unacceptable. And I just don't really understand it. These are veteran guys. You know, and you might have one, but to have that many, I didn't know if maybe the Titans were given a false cadence.
Well, here's what they were doing, according to The Athletic, and I saw this in Bleeding Green Nation, that Titans head coach Mike Vrabel noted it was a hodgepodge official crew who had not worked together. Because I thought a couple of them... I was complaining, you know, at the game with my friends that I was watching it with, that I thought a couple of them were discretionary and were kind of a little ticky-tack. But apparently also Tennessee has a very chatty defensive line, and that may have played a role as it attempted to lure the Eagles off their game, which it did.
Yeah.
That is possible. Yeah. That's possible when the D-lineman – so I forget what they call it, but you know, every once in a while, the defense, they'll start to hear the cadence, and then the defensive guy will go, hut! You know, and like you're, like when you're waiting
it.
For
yeah.
the next hot.
No,
yeah, I forget. It, that's illegal. Oh, it's called it's called disconcerting signals, which is amazing. Like disconcerting. How about just like fake,
yeah.
fake signals?
Wechter just said to me he thinks the Eagles got called for that earlier in the season. It's what is it called?
Signals?
Disconcerting signals?
Yeah, disconcerting signals. Yes, when the defense tries to fake or mimic the offense's snap count.
You're not allowed?
No, you're not.
No.
Well, because then how do you know the difference, Al, between your guys and their guys?
This is why we have Ross Tucker on.
That's right.
Penalty occurs when the defense is trying to mimic the cadence.
It's I don't know.
Disconcerting acts or signals penalty.
I go on the ice, I yell, and the other guy sends a pass. I'm like, you're the idiot, not me. So I don't see how that, well, whatever. But they've got rules for everything
yes.
now, and with everything that's gone on. We're going to talk a lot about the Eagles, but Ross, we're going to have to pick your brains on the Cowboys, too, who
yes.
suddenly have become like...
They're the best team in the NFL.
With, yeah, world beaters. We get back, we'll talk about that and everything else in the NFL. Time at 94 WIP is 7:15.
Give yourself a holiday gift that will last a lifetime with beautiful new stone countertops from Colonial Marble and Granite. Looking forward to showing off my kitchen while I'm entertaining this holiday season. Thanks to Colonial Marble and Granite. Take the time, go visit one of their area showrooms, meet with a sales professional who can help you with selection to installation. They also offer free in-home consultations. Just call, make an appointment. Their professional sales team will help you to choose the right countertop material, style, and color from the nation's largest selection. You can actually select the exact stone slab that you want for your countertop, which is really a lot of fun when you get to do that. If you need a bathroom remodeled or are building one from scratch, ask about their new vanity program. They have ready-to-assemble vanities sure to complete your project regardless of the style. Right now, get a fully installed stone countertop for just $19.99 with zero money down and zero.
All righty then. You know what that means. It means it's Wednesday. It means Ross Tucker's on with Rhea and I. And it also means it's time for the question of the day with Ava Graham.
Brought to you by Armin Chevrolet. Over 85 vehicles available during Armin Chevrolet's Red Tag year-end event. Visit ArminChevy.com. Find new roads to Armin Chevrolet. Closer than you think. Will there be more red Phillies or green Eagles under your tree?
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty close, 57% green.
Wow.
I just,
well, 11-1.
And
yeah.
a lot of comments saying both will be on the drink.
Oh, that's nice.
It is.
And then we come in with Taylor Swift. Does Taylor Swift have a Christmas album, Ross? Do you know?
Midnight. No. Oh, you mean Christmas songs.
Christmas songs.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, you know, I burnt my boyfriend's Christmas tree or whatever she'd come up with. Yeah.
I don't think so. She's probably done a song at some point.
But not the whole thing. I don't
think so.
I would think she'd go, you know, she's so popular. She could probably have the...
No, last Christmas she does.
She does?
Holiday collection.
The Christmas tree farm, yeah.
Let me ask you guys this, in all sincerity.
Here we go.
Like, obviously, I'm a fan and you guys know the hometown connection. Why do you think she's so popular? Like, the whole ticket thing and, like, what? I mean, there's other good music out there. There's other good music. Like, what is it that makes her? Because it feels like she's by far the most popular one, and I think that's really interesting.
I think it's because she has really good songs.
Is it that simple, Al?
I think, but is it that simple? I think it is.
I think that.
I mean, aren't there other people that have pretty good songs?
Not a catalog like that.
She and her lyrics are relatable. You know, she writes her music. And I know just growing up with her, I was this, you know, sad teen. Like, she relates to, I think, teenagers in the younger audience more than any other artist. And I think that's really when you see the Swifties come in. And so she's now captured Swifties who, for, 10 years, she's been super popular at least. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's why, Ross. It's as simple as
for
that.
For 10. I mean, I feel like it's been more
it's got,
like...
It could be much longer.
Another Super Bowl. We need her at the Super Bowl. Another Super Bowl performance.
You know, I think it's the songwriting is the best part of it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, she's a good singer and the music's good, but it's like it's just over and over again, it's catchy and it's upbeat for the most part, or when it's not,
it's strong lyrics and it's pop music. So yeah, it's, you know, and she's, you know, she's an attractive woman. So, you know, it's all kind of wrapped together.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's a formula that will work for at least 10 more years. We'll see
longer
what
than
happens.
That,
yeah, it is definitely.
What do you mean by that, Al?
Rhea, that was awesome.
Yeah, that's
really I love that Rhea just says like the female stuff. She just does. She just goes with it.
All right, Ross. That was the what did you call that penalty?
Disconcerting signals.
Yeah, it was Brandon Graham that was whistled for that
in the Steelers
game.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He was. That's funny.
Yeah, and speaking about Brandon Graham, he spoke out about this phenomenon of the of what's going on with the Cowboys.
It's the analytics thing, just to set it up. So the ESPN analytics department said the Cowboys, who were 9-3, have a better chance to get to the Super Bowl than the 11-1 Eagles. Actually, the Eagles were fourth.
Fourth.
So Brandon is on with us every Tuesday. Yep. And Angelo asked him about it.
Hey, man, we might have to pull them dog masks back out because, you know, I love it. Keep it like that, because we know it's America's team, man. It's a little analytics and it's a little bias, because whoever was running the analytics saying, man, my Cowboys, just the year. It's not bothering me one bit, man, because I look at it like this. Whoever's running it got to be a Cowboys fan, and they just, you know, show you by where they put the Eagles every time, even though the Eagles got the best record in the league.
So they have it, Ross. It's
so okay. I did some research on this,
yes,
after talking with Angelo yesterday, and I want people to know this is what's really wild about it. Okay, ESPN, they have their football power index. They do projections, and they have percentage chance to win the division, win the conference, win the Super Bowl, or make the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. Here's what's wild, okay? They have the Cowboys 81.6% chance to make divisional round. I'm sorry, to make the divisional round, but they give the Eagles an 89.4% chance to make the divisional round. So they are acknowledging that the Eagles have a better chance to make the divisional round. But then for the make the conference championship game, they have the Cowboys 64% and the Eagles 55%. They're essentially saying there's a pretty decent chance the Eagles are one and done in the playoffs, which is wild. And then here's the thing that if you're driving right now, focus on the road, okay?
Yeah.
Listen to this. To win the Super Bowl, they give the Cowboys a 29.3% chance. They give the Eagles a 13.3% chance. So they're not only saying the Cowboys have a better chance, the Cowboys are more than twice as likely to win the Super Bowl as the Eagles. So the team that very likely has to play three road playoff games has a twice as good a chance as a team that has to win two home playoff games. There is no way that this is actual math. There's no way. Like, I don't know what their model is, but their model is totally flawed. Nobody has been able to send me anything that indicates how that could possibly be the case.
Well, it doesn't add up, to put it in simple terms. But what does add up is it boils down to one thing to me. They think head-to-head, when they play, the Cowboys will beat the Eagles.
Very clearly. Very clearly.
And that's going to happen.
So why not just say that instead of hiding behind numbers and analytics?
Like, it's like, yeah.
And the Cowboys may beat them. It's in Dallas. The Cowboys are a very good team. No one's saying they're not.
So usually it's put your money where your mouth is. So they play. I got to think the Eagles were favored in the game.
No, they won't be favored in Dallas.
No, I don't think they will be.
Right now.
I don't think they'll be favored in Dallas for that Christmas Eve game. But they're up by two games. Even if they lose that game, they still have a pretty good chance to get the number one seed. I will say this, though. They got to keep it rolling. They got to beat the Giants Sunday. They don't have a lot of margin for error, because supposedly, so if they lose the Cowboys, then you know they split. They're 1-1. Supposedly the other tiebreakers, whatever they are, the Cowboys are higher, are better. So if they both finish 14-3 or whatever, then the Cowboys would be the number one seed and the Eagles would be number five. That is a world of difference.
Oh, it's huge.
So they can't falter. They got to keep. We really need the Cowboys to lose a game. That'd be nice.
Well, they've got the Texans and then the Jags. Then I think they have three tough games to close out the season. Talking about the Cowboys, they've got the Eagles and the Titans and the Commanders. The Commanders may be, you know, battling for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I don't know that I see them losing any of those. But I don't know that I see the Eagles losing.
Yeah.
I mean, they might, but I don't think, you know, there's a chance the Eagles split against the Giants. That probably is reasonable. The Giants are a pretty decent team, so it's probably asking a lot to beat them twice in whatever it is, like a three-week period. And the Bears, they'll beat the Bears. I mean, that won't be an easy game because
when is Justin Field back?
Plays. He is.
He is back, yeah.
And he played very well. For the most part against the Packers on Sunday. He at least gives them a chance, but I'd be surprised if they lost that game. It really is going to be whether or not – I mean, obviously the head-to-head with the Cowboys is huge, but even if we assume they lose that one, it's whether or not they sweep the Giants is really what we're looking at.
So despite all of this, 11-1, you're still – I agree with Brandon Graham. I think it's a good thing to keep your edge. Late in the season.
I'd be surprised if they lost to the Saints or the Bears. So it's the two games against the Giants.
Yep.
And obviously, forget the Cowboys game. It's whether or not they can sweep the Giants would be the difference potentially whether they're the number one seed or the number five seed.
Well, we'll get a good jump on that.
So, the Eagles, they ran all over the Packers. They passed all over the Titans. What do they need to do to beat the Giants?
Good question. That was a bad tie for the Giants.
Really was.
I thought
they didn't
they
trust
were the
their quarterback.
Team.
They didn't trust their quarterback.
No, and they made so many stupid mistakes. They didn't tackle McLaurin once. He broke two tackles. Jahan Dotson broke two tackles. I mean, either one of those, they probably hold him to a field goal. Instead, they give up touchdowns. They were in field goal range at one point, and their center, Feliciano, got a taunting penalty, which kicked him out. Then they had a play when they were field goal range, and Saquon and Richie James, the receiver, ran into each other in the backfield. So here's the concerns legitimately against the Giants. Number one, their D-line is really good. Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, even the rookie Kayvon Thibodeau, they got after the Commanders. They got after Heinicke. Now, fortunately, the Eagles' offensive line is awesome, which helps, but those guys have a chance to kind of wreck the game. I think they'd be better off, to answer your question, Rhea, probably better off throwing the ball against the Giants, like the Commanders did a little bit. Their corners, Moreau, Adoree Jackson, they've been banged up. They're not that great. They're okay. I'd rather try that than trying to run the ball down their throat. And then the thing that – I'm going to say this now, and remember I said this on Sunday – Daniel Jones running the ball.
Ryan Tannehill, you pointed it out. Ryan Tannehill did it, you know, picked up a couple first downs. Daniel Jones is mobile.
Yeah, Tannehill might have had three, and Daniel Jones is sneaky fast.
Yep.
It's funny because he really, you look at him and he looks like he's like on a J. Crew catalog or something. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't look like he'd be fast, but he's fast. And so if the Giants, I don't see a scenario where the Giants win this game without Daniel Jones' legs being a major factor.
All right, well, they'll be ready for it. I mean, you've seen enough with – I think the defense has done a good job now. I mean, I know they still get a lot of heat, but
– could it be, Ross, that the – so the defense was so keyed in on stopping Derrick Henry that they kind of just let – but, I mean, is Saquon Barkley Derrick Henry? Like, I mean, he's – sometimes he has good games. Sometimes, you know, he's running into guys in the backfield and doesn't.
Yeah,
do they have to put as much focus on him as they did on Derrick Henry, forgetting that, you know, the quarterback can still run and pick up first downs is what I'm saying?
Well, I think it was two different things in the sense that the Tannehill runs were on obvious passing downs, and it's like, Rhea, they didn't really have a plan for that.
Oh, gotcha. It looked like it.
No, because, like, Reddick – so here's the thing. If a defensive end like Reddick rushes inside, takes an inside move – the D tackle has to kind of replace him. And the one time Fletcher didn't, he got a sack on Tannehill. He was able to go down the line, chase him down. Great hustle by. We didn't talk enough about that. Great hustle by Fletcher to make the play on the sideline. They got to communicate that against Daniel Jones. Because if you leave a big opening, he's going to take it and get 10-plus yards. So they can't just allow Reddick or whoever. If you're going against a statue quarterback, it's like just free-for-all. Do whatever you want. But against a guy that can really run, you got to have a plan to not leave big seams that he can just take and exploit.
All right, you got questions for us? Give us a shout. Big game coming up here and why the Eagles should still be, it's like college football now, power rankings ranked against the Cowboys. The time of 94 WIP is 7:37. You can start NFL Week 14. And boy, we're really into it now. Week 14 off right with a no-sweat same-game parlay from FanDuel. And that's in partnership with Valley Forge Casino because it is, of course, America's number one sportsbook. So it doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or if you already have an account. You'll get free bets back if your Thursday night same-game parlay happens not to hit. NFL same-game parlays are the perfect way to combine your bets for a chance at an even bigger payday. Maybe you want Robinson anytime TD, car, passing yards, whatever it is, you become the person that puts this together. It's your game, it's your game plan, and it makes it fun throughout. You're going to love this FanDuel app. You can build your own, or you can choose from one of the popular SGPs that are already pre-built for you in FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. However you want to play, you can bet the NFL on Thursday night with a no-sweat same-game parlay. FanDuel Sportsbook is, of course, the official partner of 94WIP. Just sign up with the promo code AL if you don't have an account. If you already have an account, you're all set. Just sign in to see what you got. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner. All righty then, welcome back to WIP Morning Show. Al Morgan, Aria Hughes, Ross Tucker, and we just told by Ike that the best GM in town is Bryce Harper. I don't know. Which one is it? Howie or Bryce? Howie or Bryce? And Ross, how much input does a star player have in, I don't know, just recruiting, but who are you going to go get?
Not that much in football, but I think it definitely has more in baseball. Let me say this about Bryce Harper. Let's see these guys play for the Phillies first before we get a little bit too carried away.
I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful, but you know the guys that Howie's brought in for the Eagles, like they're playing now and they're good. I mean, think about almost all of them. It's kind of wild. I mean, across the board, almost all of the recent additions, Kaiser White is playing really well. Bradbury's been awesome. AJ Brown, you know. Howie had a really good offseason.
Yes,
and a good in-season.
Well, what I was going to say is he had a really good offseason before the 2017 year when they won the Super Bowl. I think this might have been better. I'm trying to remember all the guys he signed that year, Rhea, and the trade and the moves he made.
Well, the running backs definitely that year, you know, Jaye and LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, to come
right,
in.
But I feel like just looking overall at what he's done, especially when you consider they have the Saints first-round pick next year.
Which is currently at five, right?
I think this year is better. I think he did a better job this year.
Yeah, and then even the draft, like a guy like N'Kobe Dean comes out of, like, didn't even notice him for forever.
He wasn't playing, really, except on special teams.
And he has a big game.
So, okay, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
But I will tell you the flip side of all this.
What is it?
The Eagles actually have a lot of free agents after this year.
Yes.
We don't need to talk about that now.
Mm-hmm. You are being a Debbie Downer because they're going to have to pay Hurts, so they're going to have to let some guys go. We understand that.
But it's like, it's a lot of guys. And Fletcher Cox and Hargrave and TJ Edwards and Kaiser White and Bradbury. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on, but we'll worry about that after the year.
All right, let's talk about a guy that you want to talk about that you think has had a kind of an underrated role in the passing game, or at least did last week, Kenny Gainwell.
Well, I just thought it was a real positive on two levels what happened in that game. Number one, I love that Jalen Hurts was getting to the check down and just throwing the check down. You know, against certain defenses, they're going to be so worried about A.J. Brown and Quez and Devontae Smith down the field on some of these bigger chunk plays. It's so nice when the second level of the defense, the linebackers, are getting those deeper drops. It's so nice to just throw the ball to the back, over the ball, 3 yards. And then multiple times in that game, I don't know if it was three, but at least twice, Gainwell got it. and got upfield, made a guy miss, and I feel like he got at least 10 yards or 9 or 10 yards each time. Those are little plays, little things that are big-time winning plays and continue the progression that we're seeing from Hurts and the maturity of drops back, okay, AJ's covered, Devontae's covered. I'll just give the ball to Kenny Gainwell right here. And both times, Kenny made somebody miss or broke a tackle, got positive yardage. I just thought it was a really good sign for both Hurts and Gainwell that he was taking those checkdowns.
Well, that and when you look at that last game, it was just so overwhelming. This is why it's so confusing how they drop in people's estimation, especially the quarterback, who I'm just wondering still if is everybody sold on him now? Has he reached that point? Because I actually saw penalties being thrown. I mean, flags being thrown when you get near him. I think he's kind of reaching that point now.
Well, it's funny. There's nobody that we know of in Philadelphia that's still skeptical of Jalen Hurts, right?
We haven't heard from them in a long time.
Yeah. Nationally, there are people that still are. That they can't get, I don't know if it's what they saw at Alabama or Oklahoma or last year, out of their heads. But they're not going to believe in Hurts. And maybe this is fair, I don't know. They're not going to believe in Hurts until he does it in the playoffs. And maybe that's fair. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess. Because they remember what the Bucs game looked like and how much he struggled.
It didn't, you know, it hurt him a lot that the, you know, and you tell me how often this goes on a sideline. I don't know if it was the defensive coordinator or the defensive line coach from the Bucs caught on Mike yelling, he doesn't know how to read defenses.
Ooh.
We played it. So, I mean, it was pretty brutal. So I'm just wondering if that, you know, that is their last. I mean, listen, Al, you and I talked about it.
Yeah.
If he had just gone through last season and didn't make the playoffs, it would have been like,
very great season.
That Tampa Bay, you know, playoff game gave pause to a lot of people. But, I mean, Jesus, at this point, they should kind of realize that he's pretty good.
Well, just what you mentioned about the last game.
Yeah.
The checkdowns.
Well, I do this one national show, and every week until this week, one of the other people on the show had different stats for why the Eagles and Jalen Hurts really weren't that good. And then this week I was like, her name's Pam, actually. I was like, Pam, let me hear it. Like, I got to know what you have for me this week. What is it? And she's like, okay, I give up. They're good.
Yeah.
He's good. They're good. I got nothing.
We won over Pam.
Yes. We won over Pam from Austin, Texas.
Thank God.
Who finally gave in. But I think that's kind of where it's at. You know, on some level, in terms of respect nationally, Hurts is hurt a little bit by how good the roster is around him. And maybe rightfully so. I tweeted this during the game, Al, at Ross Tucker NFL. There are times when he goes back to throw, and that is not the way the NFL is supposed to be, where he has like 5 seconds and nobody's even within four yards of him. I mean, there are some plays where the O-line is just so good, and the Titans' pass rush is good, and they're rushing four. And it looks like Hurts has as much time
as
he could ever possibly want. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, but here's what makes that crazy. Like, oh, he's so good. You know, yes, that offensive line is very good. I mean, if Patrick Mahomes lost his stud tight end, would that be a problem?
Absolutely.
Would it be a problem for that offense? Well, Jalen Hurts lost Dallas Goedert. And I saw Jack Stoll make a catch over the middle. That was beautifully thrown last week.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know. And the people have a tough time getting past their initial impressions.
Sure.
They want to be right.
Yes.
And honestly, that's also a real thing. Al, you can speak to this in hockey. That's a real thing with scouting departments.
Yep.
Like, once they think a guy is something, your first impression is so big. Because once they put you in the box, man, it's hard to overcome that. Like, I was thought of as, okay, he's like he's like your swing center guard type. And man, to show and prove I was a starter after that, it is hard, really hard, once they put you in the box of this is who he is as a player. And a lot of people put Hurts in the box last year as he's a runner, He's not a great thrower, and he never – like, people – I think I told you guys this yesterday with Angelo. I went on Dan Patrick's show, and he asked me if I'd rather have Justin Herbert or Jalen Hurts, and because he was doing best quarterbacks under 25 years old. I said I'd rather have Hurts. And there are people that tweeted me like I'm the biggest moron in the world.
Homer.
And well, I would love to know. Like, I would love to do a poll. I know the polls we do are all Philadelphia. I'd love to do it. I might even do it on my Twitter. Like, which quarterback would you rather have for the next 5 years, Jalen Hurts or Justin Herbert? I'm telling you right now, I am very confident Herbert would win and probably win by a decent margin.
Really? Wow.
Yes. Nationally? Nationally, yes. Because people have seen Herbert make so many ridiculous throws on the highlights. That's the thing, too, about Hurts is that he doesn't really make that many, like, wow throws. It's like when he makes a nice throw, A.J. Brown gets the credit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's like he had a nice throw down the sideline, but it's like, oh, what a great – he doesn't have, like, a rocket arm. Like, I don't know if you guys saw the throw on Thanksgiving that Josh Allen made to Diggs to get the game-winning field goal. It was just ridiculous. Like, it was just Hurts does not have a hose like that. But he doesn't need to. He throws it on time, and he throws it with touch and rhythm. You know, he doesn't need to have, like, a crazy strong arm.
And you also get the reputation with the end-of-the-game drives. The Eagles just
they really haven't needed it. They needed it in the Washington game, but
that's
a
great point. Great point.
Yeah, I mean, got the guy, on Monday night, another end of the game.
Well, that was and when we come back, Russ, I have to ask you about Mark Ingram and what happened in the film room after that game.
That was horrible.
We will definitely get into that.
All right, get back. Lots of questions for Russ. Take your calls. We will get your calls. Time of 94 WIP is 7:54.